When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, Jen, what movie do you want to watch tonight?
How about John Carpenter's The Thing?
I was thinking something more along the lines of John Carter.
Pass. Let's watch Dreamcatcher.
I'm in more of a Howard the Duck kind of mood.
You know what, Sebastian? Instead of arguing, why don't we just listen to the Tentpole Trauma Podcast instead?
You mean the podcast where the hosts discuss big-budget tentpole movies that came with high hopes and great expectations, but met with resounding failure either at the box office, with critics, or both?
You said that like it wasn't our podcast.
You mean the podcast that features a revolving cast of funny and informative hosts that include Whitney Seibold from the critically acclaimed network, Rodney Altman from the Podversaken podcast, and Josh Miller, screenwriter of Sonic the Hedgehog?
Yeah, it's our podcast.
You mean the podcast that dares to celebrate cinematic failure from a place of love, reverence, and honesty, with high production values and a minimum of off-topic banter?
All right, you win. We'll watch Waterworld again.
Yes!
Hello and welcome to Happy Horror Time. I'm Tim Murdoch.
And I'm Matt Emmert, and we are lucky enough to have with us today, he was one of the actors in the original 1990 It miniseries. He played the part of young Ben. We have with us, and we'd like to welcome to the podcast, Brandon Crane.
Woo! Hi, everyone. Thank you.
Hey,
for
how are you doing today?
Doing good.
We have a ton to ask you, obviously, about it specifically. But before we even get into that, I had to ask you. So I read on IMDb that you began doing commercials when you were 4 years old after you were discovered at a party doing impressions.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, you got to tell us, who are you doing impressions of at age four?
It's funny. People like Neil Diamond.
Ooh.
I used to, my mom listened to Neil Diamond all the time. So I think from a very early age, that was like the first kind of music I was exposed to.
Mm-hmm.
So I spent a lot of time in the car because we lived in San Diego and all of our family was either in Orange County or LA. So we were always in the car. And I don't think I could avoid Neil Diamond if I tried. My mom had the cool 8-track in the station wagon.
Sweet Caroline.
Oh, yeah.
You Don't Bring Me Flowers with Barbara Streisand?
That came later. But the deep cuts, you know, some of the real sort of New York folky, like a genre, you know, all on its own. But so, yeah, I played that. And I used to sort of over-emulate Neil Diamond, you know, with the days and that kind of stuff. And I think some people thought that was really cute coming out of a little 4-year-old kid. So my grandfather was an actor and he was having a party and there was a casting agent that was there and thought I would be good in commercials.
So, oh, wow. That's awesome.
So it worked out and it became a kind of, hey, is this something you want to do? And I know a lot of kids don't have that luxury or that recollection of how they ended up getting into the business, you know, mm-hmm. like some parents just do it and that becomes what you do. But I remember like specifically having a choice because like I was glued to the TV And it was, I could care less about the programming, right? It was all about the commercials.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I would stop what I was doing to watch the commercials because I thought they were fascinating. So, you know, when presented with the opportunity to do that, I thought that would be awesome. And it was.
And then you started getting guest starring roles like Mr. Belvedere, Step by Step, Wonder Years.
Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering, you said that you were interested in the commercials, but did you know that that meant, like, did you even know at that age that you wanted to be an actor? Or like you said, it was just like, hey, I want to be part of these fun commercials.
Yeah, it was more like, it was just kind of like my after school thing. I mean, forever. I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. I liked having a different kind of childhood, you know, like I get picked up from school and we'd go from Escondido to LA in an afternoon back when you could do that. You know, it would take you a little over an hour. I mean, it was just this different era. Like you can't go to 7-Eleven in an hour.
Oh, no.
Obviously, I couldn't do what I was doing today. Obviously, I couldn't do what I was doing today, you know, without being a few minutes late. But I just enjoyed doing what I was doing. I didn't feel any like pressure or.
That's so cool.
like a sitcom takes like a week to film. And like, so obviously did you have like an on-set tutor or like, like on Friday nights, did you perform in front of the live studio audience?
Yeah. So there were a few of those, like Mr. Belvedere and Step by Step, Full House, those kinds of things.
You know, you a blast.
That was awesome because you'd go in there at like you go in there on a Monday and I think they'd fit you for costumes and you'd read it a few times with the whole cast. Mm-hmm. And that way they could decide what works and what doesn't. You know, and then Tuesday you might read it again and finish the wardrobe stuff and you might do a little bit of blocking. It might, you know, show you where you need to stand and, you know, when you enter and exit and all that. And then if there were any special bits that had to be shot somewhere else, we'd do that on the Thursday. And then Friday, you'd do it in front of the live audience.
Wow.
Super cool.
As a kid, like in like 1989, late 80s, as a child, was there like laws or like, did they watch over you night like closely or?
Yeah, I mean, they had a studio, like the studio teacher, to answer your question. We always had one. So if school was in session, we had to do a minimum of 3 hours of schoolwork every day.
I love that.
Yeah. Well, you know, me on the other hand, it was difficult because sometimes I didn't know I was working until like the Friday before a courier would drop a script off at my door at night. I guess I'm working, you know, so I think I worked just enough for it to potentially have been problematic.
Yeah. Well, actually, speaking of that, I was going to ask you because you had a recurring role on The Wonder Years, did you land that role before it? Because I know it was, you started right around the same. Oh, you did. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you and landed that role before.
Yeah. And I think that gave me the creds to be seen for it. If there is such a thing. I auditioned for Wonder Years like three times. The first episode I did, I was Doug Baker, right? And then a couple weeks later, maybe only 3 or 4 weeks later, there was a walkout episode, you know, where I was on the student council. And it was just another role that I auditioned for. And then Todd Langan wanted to bring a Doug-like character back, so he made Doug Porter. so I had to audition for that again and get it. So, I mean, I had to fight like hell to get on that show.
Wow.
But it was so worth it. Like,
and such a great show. I mean, I remember watching it like as a kid. Great show.
Other gigs would come and go, but none were as sweet as that.
Yeah. Sure. Well, you know, moving on into it. Well, first off, like growing up, were you a fan of horror? What was the first horror movie you can remember seeing?
Okay.
Or have you watched it lately? The 1990?
Right. I had, what was it? The Trilogy of Terror, I think. I think that's what it was called. Something like that. Yeah. And it was the first thing I ever saw. And it was on like late night television, you know, on my black and white in the bedroom when I was really little, like 7 or 8. you know, and it was, you know, I just remember that little.
Yes, I know what you're talking about. The little
Zulu doll running around. You know, that to me, that was so terrifying. But I hadn't really consumed a whole lot of horror up to that point. Mm-hmm. I think I'd seen A Nightmare on Elm Street or two.
Oh, that's a good one.
You know, but I wasn't a connoisseur, right? That wasn't my genre. That wasn't my thing. But I had this cool kid. He was my neighbor, and he lived two houses down. He was a couple years older than I was. So he was kind of like my pop culture ambassador, you know, like everything that was kind of cool, he would introduce me to, you know. So he gave me, I think around the same time, he gave me a copy of Salman Rushdie's Satanic Verses, just because at the time that was like the most taboo thing you could.
And how old were you at this time?
Probably 14.
Oh, okay. Okay. I thought you were going to say like seven.
Yeah. No, it's just some light reading, you know?
Yeah, of course.
Past the time in between first and second grade. No, they, that whole family was cool, by the way. But Paul, especially, he turned me on to all kinds of things. And one of them being Stephen King, right? He said, there's this book you've got to read. And it was because of that scene, right? So it was a little taboo. You felt, you know, like you were sneaking your grandpa's Hustler, you know. So anyway, I read the book. But because I was so transient as a kid, you know, through all this acting thing and being in the car and we moved quite a bit, I don't think I stayed at a school, any one school, longer than 2 years up to that point. I didn't really have a father, you know, in the picture. I found a lot of comparisons to myself with Ben.
Oh, so you're talking about it's when you first were reading
Mark.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, so that was my first introduction to, you know, cerebral horror. Let's put it that way.
Wow.
And I just remember phoning the agent saying, if this ever becomes a thing and it's not too late, can you please put me up for this?
Really? You wanted to be Ben specifically?
Specifically, yeah.
Wow.
I'd felt, it was the first time I'd ever really felt a connection with any fictional character. So
that's so awesome.
Yeah, it was great. And it was so like serendipitous. But 6 months later, got a phone call to come audition for it. And the rest, you know, is history. Mm-hmm.
That's what I was going to ask you. What was the audition process like? I mean, obviously that's so cool that you had already set out to audition before you even knew it was going to be turned into something, but what did you have to do for the audition? What was that like?
So it's pretty standard fare. I mean, you go in and you sit down at a table and you read. One night I went in and it was the scene where I just met Eddie and I'm, you know, we're kind of chucking rocks and, you know, introducing ourselves to one another. And I think it's like, yeah, right after the Henry Bowers chases me down to the Barrens. So I read that and I felt like that went really well. And I didn't hear anything for a couple of weeks.
Oh.
So I thought, well, okay, I guess I didn't get it. I mean, at that age, I was so used to rejection. There's only so much work you can do, right?
Yeah.
You're going to get no's. And most of the time, it has absolutely nothing to do with you.
Mm. Or and what a lesson to learn at such a young age.
Well, it was interpreted, you know, by several grownups in the periphery at the time. But they drove the point home. I mean, it has nothing to do with you most of the time. And I think that helped me, you know, continue the pursuit. Because, I mean, if you were unprepared for that amount and frequency of rejection, you'd be like, what am I doing this for?
No, I can't. Yeah. I mean, you have to have a thick skin, and especially at a young age,
you've put yourself in an abusive relationship, and that's with yourself. And that's not good. Right.
I mean, I'm still learning.
we're all still learning.
Yeah, I think we're all, so you hadn't heard anything for a few weeks. And then what happened? What happened after that?
And that was a callback, and it was the same kind of routine. Went in and solo read again. And it sounded like they were getting a little more serious about it. So, and I thought that went really well. I was like, yes, I'm so close. I'm going to get this. And then more time goes by. So I would say it was another couple of weeks easily. long enough for me to feel like I didn't get it.
Jeez.
Long enough for me to convince myself that I didn't get it. Because we don't always get feedback.
Yeah, nothing really, right? You just, you audition and go and then hope you get a call.
Right. And sometimes they'll provide feedback to the agent that they can relay to you, which is, you know, so helpful. And back then, not enough people did it. Because how are you going to get better if you're not getting any feedback?
Yeah.
You're not always doing the work. And for me, that was the only way I could get better. I mean, like some of my line readings early Wonder Years are so cringy now. You know, just, you know, you look at that and you're like, wow, not my finest work.
There's a lot of acting from the 80s that I think we can all look back on and say is a little cringy. So
not my finest work. Very, you know, presentational and you know, it's like putting Shirley Temple in the Terminator. It just doesn't, for some reason that.
Well, that I want to see.
that's something we'll see.
That would be cool. You know, you're the tap dance number coming down the stairwell. you know, close up with the rolly eyes, that kind of thing. No, I wasn't prepared for that, but they brought us back to do some what would they call it?
They'd
call
chemistry it, readings.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
So chemistry read, and when I got there in the waiting room, and first of all, it was on a Saturday, and that's foreign. Like that never happens. So there's a little tiny hole in the wall office place on Fairfax. Mm-hmm. And I know it was La Brea. And I remember going in there. It could have been a dentist's office. It could have, you know, that's the life it could have lived. You know, very unassuming. And I'm in there and it sort of hit me that there weren't any other fat kids in the room. there weren't any fat kids. So I get rotated out, you know, and they had some of the other kids, you know, read the Ben part, obviously not for placement, but just to get me out of the room and kind of, you know, keep things fresh for everyone. And you don't do this, but I had an aside with the camera operator, right? It was the casting assistant. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Where are the other fat kids? And he says, dude, I know they're looking in Houston or, you know, in Texas. They had a couple kids they were interested in that were out there and a couple of kids in Vancouver. But he said, no, I think it's you.
Oh, gosh, wow. That's awesome.
You never get that.
I know. I was just going to say people. To be able to say, I think it's
no, you. No. It's so like... It's taboo. Like you don't, everybody's got their poker face on.
Did you, I'm very interested in like, even the way you're describing, it's like, I know how the book describes Ben and they do talk about him like a fat kid. And I'm wondering, did you have that age? Did you have any qualms about playing a character that was labeled like that? I mean, it's just to have the confidence to be able to be like, yeah, I'm going to play this character. Who cares? I don't care. Did you have any qualms about that? Or were you totally like Mr. Body Positive, you know, even at age 13, 14?
You know what? Not body positive, but I was definitely bank account positive.
Right? That's a good answer. Good answer. No. But I mean, yeah.
No, honestly, I struggled with that. I mean, obviously, I'm not, you know, Dwayne Johnson here.
Hey, you know, you look great.
I'm a fat fella, especially now, you know, through this quarantine thing. I put on like 35 pounds.
We all have. Trust me, we all are.
You not. Have not gained 35 pounds.
Well, I we would
need
look
to,
great.
We would need to time travel and do an intervention. If that was the case. but yeah, no, I did a lot of comedy relief. And in the beginning, even through Wonder Years, there were a lot of those moments where I was just sort of the token fat kid. I didn't portray anyone with any real substance, you know? So it was all sort of gags and fat jokes. And I mean, like even Mr. Belvedere, of course, is a food gag. You know, there were a lot of things that I did. In fact, even before it, I did this special that I remember, and it was called The Story of Fat, right? What? And my Yeah, no, it was bizarre. It was for ABC, some primetime sort of PSA special or something. And I'm cast with this family, and I'm sitting in front of a Fiesta Bowl of, you know, Frosted Flakes. And so, I mean, just they were trying to, you know, make a point about how much we're consuming as Americans, and especially at the time.
Wow.
But those kinds of things didn't help me with, you know, my image, but it sort of solidified that I'm filling maybe a necessary but rewarding niche.
I would get a gay role. So, yeah.
Well, I think things are very different now, but yeah. I also applaud you for being able, you know, to having the courage to take on roles like that and not let it affect you too negatively, you know. And it also, like, I think the role of Ben, you know, it's very fully dimensional. Obviously, it's not just a joke. I mean, it obviously it's something he's struggling with because there's bullies who are shitty to everyone in that.
I was a kid, the bully scared me more than the clown. But as I grow up, the clown scares me more than the bullies.
I feel like we have to move into, because one of the things I especially into it, like, there's so many amazing things about it. I remember seeing it as a kid and it terrifying me, and so many questions about people that you worked with. Like,
got to go to Canada.
Well, yes. Yeah,
for what a was long it, like, time it was great
over the summer, right?
Yeah, best vacation ever.
So did you become really close, because the young cast members, you know, they're in it all together so often, did you guys all become close during filming?
I think we did, yeah. I mean, we had our clicks, right? Seth and Jared hung out more together. They were older than us anyway, and I think Ben too, Ben Heller. Mm-hmm. I think they all had a couple years on the rest of us, but the rest of us, we were peas in a pod. We were always together. As my wife pointed out, we still are now. Yeah,
really, that's amazing. I was gonna say, I'm a big fan of the director Tommy Lee Wallace, because he worked with John Carpenter on the original Halloween and then went on to direct Halloween 3, Fright Night 2. But I was just wondering, what was his directing style like? Are there any memorable moments, like, from working with him or how he interacted with the young cast?
I think he had a tremendous amount of patience for us. Emily Perkins said not too long ago, when she was sort of asked what the dynamic was like working with the rest of us, you know, I'm sure there are diagnoses for all of us in varying forms. You know, we were nuts, all of us. I mean
that's a very, those are the teen years. That's when hormones and everything's going crazy.
Oh yeah. No, there's some interesting anecdotes.
Please tell. Please.
Unfortunately. No, I can get there. Yeah. I can get there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But Tommy was really patient, and he's an actor's director. He really is. I mean, he knows what he wants, and there is no detail left unturned. I mean, right down to my haircut. When I first went to Vancouver, I was like, yeah, I'm skipping school 2 weeks early. You know, later, bitches. Get on a plane, go to Vancouver, have a wardrobe fitting. And it's the day I meet John Ritter, and we signed the contracts and all that stuff.
How cool is that?
Oh, it was fantastic. Yeah, my first day there, they were doing the outdoor scene where Bev comes home, Annette O'Toole comes home. So we were in that little neighborhood, and I just remember Tommy is there basically directing my haircut.
Wow.
Because it was a haircut that he had when he was a kid, and he wanted Ben to have it, right? I mean, no detail left unturned. And you know, he was very good at balancing getting things done and communicating how we need to be, like communicating the gravitas of those important moments. But at the same time, he wasn't a total politician. I mean, there were times that, in fact, one time I remember in particular, he approached me during lunch and said, hey, Brandon, lay off the turkey.
What?
I was like, what? What do you mean? He's like, it's making you tired. You know, my inner monologue is like, no, it's probably the 18-hour days.
Oh.
But I'll go with you on that turkey.
You're like, I'll go with the turkey. Thanks.
I didn't eat turkey for years because I had a complex about it. But
yeah, when I eat a turkey, I need a nap.
I feel like that's an urban legend. Like, I mean, I know there's the tryptophan, whatever. I mean, like, I mean, any meal makes people.
The reason you crash after Thanksgiving is because
your family.
It's the denouement. There's all this buildup and anticipation, and you're busting your ass putting a turkey together. And
exactly.
Then, you know,
I mean, I'm not the person in the kitchen, but I kind of relate.
No, but it's over. And you're like, okay, that's it. I'm done.
So he was very particular then.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just going to say, very particular, but in a good way, because I've heard of directors who aren't actors, directors, and are very much about getting the shot, not getting the emotion, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if you look at cinematography now, I think because audiences' eyes are much more spoiled, right? What we expect is much, much greater visually. Tommy found the shots, but the shots were secondary to what was going on. So very generous with rehearsal times. If he could tell you were struggling with something, he would offer you that little nugget that helps it make sense, especially, you know, for young actors. We haven't experienced all these things. I think missing a meal was probably my greatest fear up until that point. So having someone break it down for you like that was priceless.
Wow.
Tommy Lee Wallace is a freaking legend.
That's so great to hear, because like I said, I'm a big fan of his. You know, you mentioned John Ritter, and I wanted to say, obviously, John Ritter was very famous by that point, and he played the adult version of Ben. Did you work with him at all to align on your character? Like, did you work with him specifically on anything?
That day, actually, we did. Tommy put us together for a little while to kind of figure out what we could do. And I suspect it's because of all of the kid pairings, we looked the least alike. Right down to eye color. I mean, if you notice, when you see it, you see it. But
it must have been cool to go home and say, the person playing the adult version of my character is John Ritter.
Yeah, it was the best. It was the best. And he was still hot shit then, you know? I mean, it was...
Yeah, Jack Tripper.
Yeah, I mean, he had a movie. I think Skin Deep was out at the time.
That sexy movie, I saw it.
Yeah. That was kind of creepy. Yeah, I never looked at condoms the same way again.
It glew in the dark.
I guess I must have missed that one.
Oh, no. The only thing that movie needed in that scene specifically was, like, something from John Williams, you know?
The score.
Some awesome score. What do they call that thing that was in the prequels? It's so famous right now. Like, anyway,
Skin Deep was controversial.
It was. But he was generous. He was generous with his time. He participated with me. There was a professional need, of course, but I think he was happy to be a mentor.
That's
and
awesome.
it was great for me, because I think it was a really lopsided arrangement. The only thing I gave him was, you know, some Tetris lessons on my Game Boy.
And tips on not eating turkey around Tommy Lee Wallace.
Yeah, no, and that dude, he taught me a lot. I mean, he taught me how to bite my fingernails and never quit.
I'm guilty of that too.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is it.
Yeah, I am. Of course, we have to ask you about working with Tim Curry and who played Pennywise. Well, I'm just wondering, what was he like on set? Was he a method actor? And were you actually terrified of him when he had the makeup on?
I think we were terrified of his stardom.
Oh,
right. He was a legend already at that point. We were all familiar with Rocky Horror.
Clue.
Yeah, and I think The Hunt for Red October was out at the time. So like we knew Tim Curry, and Tim Curry was on a show called Wise Guy back in the day with Ken Wall and Jonathan Banks. And Jonathan Banks was like, so I knew Tim Curry because I've watched everything Jonathan Banks was doing, because he was kind of like my first role model when I was 8.
Oh, wow.
We were on this interesting and very short-lived TV series called Otherworld.
I know it.
Oh, that's a whole other.
Tony Odell, kind of I know it.
So, you know, I'd always, he was super friendly to me on the set and all that. So I've always been a fan. So I knew of Tim Curry, you know, because I watched Wise Guy. But on set, he's a very unassuming figure. You know, some of the other kids had different interactions with him. My interactions with Tim Curry were clinical at best, right?
Really?
So like the scene where I see him standing on the lake, he shot his bit before I shot mine. So when I met Tim Curry, we were passing ships. They were setting up, you know, for the reversal, looking at me from the lake POV. And I saw him coming and I was like, oh, here we go. Here we go. And I had, you know, sort of told the AD how nervous I was about it. And so she made sure to introduce me in a way that wasn't embarrassing. And he's like, well, here I am. I said, okay, cool. Well, I'm going to go do my thing. Nice to meet you. And I wouldn't see him until we shot the confrontation at the end. And that was something else, man, because to Tommy's credit, you know, Tommy, again, really favors the rehearsal and he fosters a really open environment, an open creative environment. Nothing's so rigid that you can't talk about it or you can't try it. And so, I mean, there's footage. I know there's going to be footage in the doc that kind of shows how things played out during that confrontation. And what was amazing to me at the time as a young actor and someone who went to school to do the work after I did the work, I can look back and just sort of get lost in the madness with him. I mean, again, totally unassuming. Oh, I'm standing here. You want me to do this? Okay. And then what? Do you want me to turn this way? I mean, this is the way he was. And then wow. Tommy would say, okay, well, let's try one. And the minute Tommy said action, there's just some switch that flipped in Tim.
Suddenly he's this terrifying.
Suddenly. Yeah. No, I mean, suddenly he is the embodiment of this character. So which is acting. Hello. But, you know, but as a young actor, someone who, you know, came up doing sitcoms and gags really in sitcoms, I'd never witnessed anything like that firsthand ever.
That's amazing.
Ever. So that was a lesson that I'll never forget. I mean, just the fact that he was able to turn it off and turn it on at a moment's notice and still be personable and take pictures with kids. Yeah. He was the shit.
No, that's amazing. You know, another thing I wanted to ask you about you had read the book before. And so, you know, one of the most controversial parts of the book was when Beverly has sex with each of the six boys to, I guess they call it restore unity to the group. And so they can find their way out. And I think they're all supposed to be like 11 or 12 or whatever. Did you know about that in the book? And was there any like trepidations? Like, are they going to actually do this in the movie?
It's ABC.
I mean, I knew, but did they explain right away that it like, this is off?
I knew for a fact that was not coming in. And I think that was part of the reason the book ended up in my hands. not because I sought after the smut, right? But it was just, that was kind of the thing. It's like the taboo element. You know, here's a book that's openly published. It talks details, graphically details, you know, the size and scope of the affair, you know, in so many ways. We knew about it.
So once the TV miniseries movie all wrapped and you're all done, was there like a cast and crew screening or like, did you guys all watch it together for the first time? Or?
Yeah, it was cool. I got to meet Will Wheaton.
Star Trek.
You're like working with Tim Curry and John Ritter and you're like, I got to meet Will Wheaton.
It was cool. I'll never forget it. He was super cool.
No, I thought I saw him in the movie The Curse.
Stand By Me, yeah.
Yeah.
Stand By Me. He, you know, he was in, you know, I mean, that's probably why he's there. But afterwards at the reception, he made a point to tell me he enjoyed what I did. And I'll never forget that. That was the coolest thing ever.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you keep it? You were starting to talk about us, but I wanted to wait till we got to this point. But do you keep in touch with a lot of, with any of the cast members, I guess the other kids? And if so, whom? And
yeah.
Like when you're 14 and you wrap up, the movie wraps, like how, because there is no Facebook, like how did you, you know?
No, the kids, I mean, the kids in the new movie, they're still a unit, you know, because they've got social media and they've got a following and they've got a fandom. You know, that hit before the movie even came out. Those are none of the things that we ever experienced, you know? Yeah. So for us, it was very much like, see you next time. You know? We were super close and the job was over. So we, you know, go our separate ways. And, you know, I kept in touch with Emily because she would come to LA. She's from Vancouver. So she would come down for pilot season. And she would stay for a month or so and ride that out. And so we'd meet up after auditions and things like that. I mean, you know, her father taught me about pacifism and, you know, some other important lessons in history. And my mother taught Emily about what kind of turkey is better, roasted or pressed.
Which one is it?
Roasted, obviously.
Oh, of
but
course.
But no one's eating turkey, according to director Tommy.
No. No one while they're working should be.
No one's working on the set. No. You know, so we it took a while for us to fall out of touch. I mean, we'd go to theme parks and stuff, just hang. Whenever they were in town, we'd get together. I saw Seth a few times, you know, for a couple of years afterwards. I ran into Jared Blanchard at a couple of auditions. And I wouldn't see anybody until Ben and I connected on Facebook, Ben Heller. Mm-hmm. We connected on Facebook probably 15 years ago. And he came down and we met up at the Bigfoot Lodge, had a couple drinks, a little reunion, and then went our separate ways. Oh. And then, you know, Mikey got us together for this documentary that we shot 3 years ago. Who's counting? and he booked us into some cons. So in 2018, Marlon Taylor and I got to hang out in Atlanta and do, you know, our first convention together. And then almost all of us have gotten together for some conventions in Europe.
Yeah,
so I mean we've done a few. Maybe we did one in Germany, and we've done like three or four in the UK, which is just great. The fans over there are amazing.
It must be fun. It's like little mini reunions, and it's almost like the conventions are events that, you know, it's nice to have those because it's like a reason for people to come together and you to see old friends and old coworkers, you know. But I have to ask you about, obviously, when you heard that they were remaking it into a movie. Well, first off, have you seen both of, there's so many questions about it, because I know you have a cameo in It Chapter 2. Right. So my first question is, how did that come to be? Like, how did that,
So I think I can hit them both at the same time.
Okay.
Warner Brothers has threatened to do it 4 or 5 different times in the last decade. Hands down. I mean, they've gotten people attached. I mean, just before Andy came on board, there was, you know, Cary Fukunaga had, you know, some epic thing. And I think it was just on the heels of True Detective. So everybody was like, oh, Cary Fukunaga. don't get me wrong. He's incredible. I mean, an incredible storyteller, you know, potentially too visceral for even Stephen King, though, looking back. It wasn't until I saw the first picture of the kids together that, oh shit, it's real. And I'm 40, just 40 then.
Now you're playing the grown-up version of your grown-up.
I was like, wait a minute. No, this can't be happening now because I'm only 40. I'm not supposed to be up on a shelf collecting dust as a classic. I'm too young for this shit. I can't.
Yeah.
Some of us reached out to our new counterparts. I actually reached out to Jeremy Ray Taylor, and all I said was, "Hey, dude, I got your back for whatever it's worth. Don't let the clown push you around too much."
Yeah, that's awesome.
And he shot right back at me, and he's like, "Rad. No, I'm not going to let you down." And I said, "Good, good, good. And that kid did not disappoint.
Yeah, that's so cool that you reached out. I was going to ask you about if you had met him.
And I know Jared reached out to Nicholas Hamilton, and they talked about all things Henry Bowers. Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen Jeremy a few times. We've done a couple of the conventions together. He's a great kid. Great kid. Awesome family. And he did an amazing job. So I didn't believe it was going to happen. It happened. And when Andy dropped the first trailer, that broke the internet that day.
I remember.
Yeah, it was huge.
Yeah, it was absolutely huge. I had like chills. I mean, I was like, what? I can't wait. He's going to destroy this. It's going to be amazing. So I reached out to him on Facebook again, like for whatever it's worth, but I can't wait to see what you do with this thing. Yeah. And then he clapped right back and was like, oh my God, it's you. And we just started talking. I went to see the movie opening night. And as soon as I got home, I was so excited and couldn't believe what I'd just seen. Watching these kids, you know, like carry a feature film all by themselves without adult counterparts, without commercials, and without television censors.
Yeah.
And plus that the movie had all the same, you know, language that I shared with my friends. I mean, those kids were us growing up at that time. But I reached out to him. I was like, dude, that was amazing. And this is where it gets funny. He says, I think you should do a cameo. And I'm like, well, really? Like, this is how it works now? You know, you don't have to, like, you know, walk the streets of Hollywood Boulevard now. You literally just hop on Messenger and you're like, hey, your movie was awesome. You know, do you want to be in
it? Great, you're in it.
Yeah. Okay. This is how the world works now? Unbelievable. And so, you know, we kind of talked about the options and if it was going to be like, you know, the whole Ricky Lee scene where Ben's in the bar, mm-hmm. Or if I was one of Bev's employees, just to pop my face in there. And then he came back several months later with some sides. And, you know, he said he pitched the idea to New Line and they did backflips. They thought it was cool. So I think they needed to see if I could still do it.
And you're the only original cast member who has a cameo in the new ones, right?
Yeah.
Congratulations.
I think that's awesome. Yeah. No, but it's such like the Easter egg that everyone who's a fan wants to see, you know?
Right. And there were people who got it and there are people who didn't. And and that's okay. Like the people that got it, I know, are the freaking diehards.
Yeah.
I don't look exactly like I did then. In fact, like one of my Instagram pictures is so funny, dude. It's like, it's a picture of me in the scene. It's a two part, right? There's a picture of me. It's a split frame. There's like me at 14 as Ben, and then like young Anakin Skywalker. Right. And then you swipe and it's me in the scene in chapter 2, and then the next half of the frame is Darth Vader in Return of the Jedi with his mask off, right? Sort of like how it started, how it's going, and it's
You're like, I'm a meme.
Yeah, no, it's funny.
Here's the big question for you. Tim Curry or Bill
Skarsgård?
Yeah, thank you for that. I can't pronounce
that. Who do you prefer, Tim Curry as Pennywise or Bill Skarsgård? I have a feeling that you backing away from the camera means that you want to say Bill Skarsgård, but you don't want to not be loyal to yours.
Don't put words in my mouth.
I'll say my personal preference. Wait, I prefer Tim Curry. That's me.
I'm really interested, actually, Brandon. What do you think?
There's a thing, right? And it's apples and oranges. It really is. I don't think that you can do a real comparison. And I'll tell you why. This is my thinking behind this. If I was a kid, especially when Eddie sees him for the first time in the new films, some scary ass clown with blood on his face and a bunch of shit in his collar holding balloons is not tempting to me. You can't, I wouldn't be lured by that. The positive side to that, though, is that I think the choice that they made with that character reminds me a lot of like when Johnny Depp took over Willy Wonka. You have to add this childishness to the character, this sort of weird innocence, mm-hmm. to make it new. And that's the only way he'd be able to even remotely tempt these kids. And you see it with Bill. There are moments where he's just like this and he's a child.
Good impression.
Okay, then you get it. Then you can start looking, you know, behind the visage, you know. Tim Curry, on the other hand, had an environment that was more conducive to his more straight man style. I think there was a kind of lingering foreboding over the whole miniseries, like this cloud over the whole miniseries that sets this mood of like something's whack, you know, something's not right. And I think that fuels Tim Curry's Pennywise.
Yeah.
I think Tim Curry could lure a child and then bust out the fangs when he's ready to eat. So just deciding, you know, who is more effective, I think given their environments and the constraints of the screenplays, I think they're both wonderfully effective.
Yeah. I actually,
I'm not trying to be a politician. It's apples and oranges.
I actually agree. And I think you made a really good point because they were different interpretations of the part and both great. I mean, as a kid watching it, in 1990, I was absolutely terrified by Tim Curry. As an adult watching Bill Skarsgård, I wasn't as scared, but I appreciated it because, like you said, he had different dynamics that Tim Curry didn't even explore. So I totally see what you're saying. I actually don't think that's a politician answer. I think that's an honest answer.
Yeah. I think the environment and I think that universe is wouldn't have even allowed for Tim Curry to explore that side of things. I don't think it would even be necessary. I think given the era in which it was in and, you know, coming from the source material, it was correct.
Yeah.
If you're gonna, you know, willingly, purposefully take something and pull it out of its era, like Andy did, that leaves you all the creative space in the world.
Before we get to our final question, which we ask everyone we interview, I do have one just kind of dumb question related to just when people are in a role that's so iconic. I just wonder, like, did people taunt you with like Pennywise type things, like after it, saying like they all float down here? I mean, how often do people say that line to you?
They say it more now than ever. But it's fine. I put myself out there, though. I mean, that's the difference.
I love it.
I mean, Jesus, this was on my birthday cake.
We all float after 40. Just for people listening, he has a cake topper that says "We all float after 40." That is incredible. I love that.
And a sane person would say, "I can't get away from this shit," but I enjoy it.
I would embrace it. I would love.
Well, trust me, if there's anything to embrace, I mean, this was an iconic, absolutely incredible miniseries. It still holds up. I mean, look, the movies are great, absolutely great. The miniseries had different constraints for what they were, and being on TV and still being able to be that terrifying and effective, it blew people's minds at that time, you know?
Yeah.
And the performances were great and all that. So our final question for you, and you sort of have given us a couple, but maybe there's one or two more. We always ask everyone, what is one thing that you can tell us about your experience working on it that you've never told any other interviewer, any other publication, any other podcaster? It can be, you know, something behind the scenes, an Easter egg, just one thing you've never told in another interview.
I'm a pretty open book.
So, yeah.
I'm consulting with counsel.
Are we allowed to talk about this? Well, now I'm really interested, Tim. Are you now?
Yes.
He is consulting.
He has stepped away
to consult with his wife, and we are waiting. This could be some really juicy gossip. Okay,
here we go.
Tell us. We're ready.
Virginity.
What?
Wait, what?
I said virginity. Never told anybody.
He lost his virginity on the set of it?
Wait. You wait.
Yeah, I got it. That's a good one.
Wait.
Not with anybody in the cast either.
Wait. I don't think I understand. Wait, so you lost.
What don't you understand?
No, because you keep cutting them off. Okay, you lost your virginity during the filming of the movie.
Yeah.
Wow.
So young.
Oh, okay. That is a great tidbit, but not with anyone in the cast. Okay, because that was my first thought. I was like, Beverly? No.
No.
Wow.
No. It was
quite the summer for you in Canada.
It was quite the summer. Yeah. It was quite the summer.
That is amazing. Well, look, this has been so much fun. Yes. Seriously. Like, we've really enjoyed.
Thanks for bearing with me today.
You're awesome.
This is great. Like, thank you for taking the time to chatting with us. We're so fortunate we got to speak with you. I mean, we've been big fans of it since we were kids. I mean, yeah.
it's so awesome.
Yeah. And amazing. So thank you. It's been such a pleasure. Yes, seriously, Brandon.
No, pleasure's mine. You guys are awesome.
Cool. Well, take care. We will definitely be in touch, okay?
All right. Let's stay in touch.
Okay. Have a good night.
Good night.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Happy Horror Time. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, and many other platforms.
If you haven't already, please like and follow our Happy Horror Time page on Facebook. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Happy Horror Time to see all our glorious posts.
If you want to contact us, send us an email at happyhorrortime@gmail.com. Feel free to give us movie recommendations, interview suggestions, or just tell us how wrong we were about something.
We want to give a special thank you to our patrons for their support. If you'd like to be a patron, please visit patreon.com/happyhorrortime to sign up. Patrons get access to our monthly bonus episodes and exclusive content. We've actually built a pretty good sized library of bonus content by now, and there's much more to come.
I'm Tim Murdoch.
And I'm Matt Emmert. And we hope you've had a happy horror time.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.